If you will take out your scripture sheet, our text for today breaks into a series because I wanted to read the text from the town I just visited. So in the early 50s of the first century, there's a small group of Christians meeting in one of the villas in Corinth. Paul's been away for a while after being with them for 18 months, and he writes them back about the nature of the church and its leadership. And he focuses on teamwork and quality. What then is Paul and what is Apollos? Servants through whom you believed, as the Lord assigned to each. I planted, Apollos watered, but God gives the increase. So neither is he who plants anything nor he who waters, but God who gives the increase. Now the one who plants and the one who waters are equal, and each shall receive his own reward according to his own labor. For God's we are fellow workers. God's field, God's building are you. According to the grace of God given to me, like a wise master builder, I laid a foundation, and another man is building upon it. Let each man take care how he builds upon it, for other foundation can no one lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now, if anyone builds on the foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble, the work of each will become manifest, for the day will disclose it, because it will be revealed by fire. What sort of work each has done, the fire will test it. If anyone's work survive which he has built, he shall receive a reward. If anyone's work shall be burned down, he shall suffer loss, though he himself shall be saved, but only as through fire. Do you not know that you are God's temple, and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? If anyone the temple of God destroys, destroyed he will be by God, for God's temple is holy, and that temple you are. This is the word of the Lord. A lot has happened since last I saw you, some of it delightful, some tragic, much of it educational and inspiring, some positively hair-raising, like leaving Istanbul early Friday morning, and then later the same day seeing footages of city squares you'd walked on only 24 hours ago, raked with helicopter gunfire. Much has transpired in 12 days, some of it shocking, some of it pure providence, and all of it leaving on me a mark, a fresh awareness of our historical and cultural and religious complexity, and the necessity for the church to do the one thing for which we were designed to do, which is not to have an answer for every dilemma, but simply to be the church. To be the church in Minneapolis, in Baton Rouge, in Dallas, or in the aged splendor of Rome, or the refugee camps of the Greek Isles, or the sensual underground of Paris, or the complexity of Istanbul, where post-Christian Europe and a committed Muslim Middle East grind together on tectonic plates across the Bosphorus or right here in Greenwood. To be God's people. The people who keep following Jesus Christ no matter what happens to them or around them. That is our purpose. To endure in this great love of the triune God and in this great mission starting wherever you are. This is who we are, and this is what we are to do. And to go away for a fortnight, which is a good British word, is to come home with a wide new angle. Did you know that there is an IMCA camp in Greenville? Trajan's Forum is a complex of ruins in central Rome that date to the early 2nd century. On a day that ended with Laurie sighing, I've seen about enough statues for one day. We ran across a cappuccino-colored young woman with an expensive camera. Just the three of us, overlooking a balcony at this huge archaeological site, and her clicking away. And when I asked, since she looked Italian, "Are you from Rome?" her answer was, "No, from Seville. I'm a Spanish graduate student in ancient architecture." And when she asked, "And where are you from?" Lori answered, "Greenwood, South Carolina." "Oh," she said with eyes bright, "I went to IMCA camp." "Do you mean Camp Greenville?" I asked. "No," she said with increasing conviction, Imca Camp. I was puzzled. Imca Camp, what is that? Been using a skill set where he taught me about reading personalized license plates. I sounded the letters to myself one at a time. IMCA. I looked at her and smiled. You mean YMCA Camp? She exploded with a smile. Yes, Imca Camp. I did the motions to the YMCA song and sang the chorus. She mimicked me and began to dance. Lori stood in sheer amazement, and it was a moment of cross-cultural communication. While away, it was hard to hear about the shootings in Dallas, the terrorism in Nice, and the eruption of the Turkish coup. There was news of death everywhere and every day. But this is our world. And I again realized how our American isolation, largely due to our geography between the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, isolates us from much of the world's chaos, but not all of it. More than once in the last 12 days, I entered into animated discussion with Brits and Aussies and Kiwis from New Zealand who met me and asked, sometimes in anger, why do your police hate black people? Or what are you going to do about all those guns? And when I asked the Greeks and Turks to tell me about the Syrian refugees, I heard a much different spin than you get from the media. And it hit me. We are as wrong about them as they are about us. So we need to do more than watch the tube. We need to talk to one another cross-culturally, face-to-face, whenever we get an opportunity. I watched so much of the BBC the last 2 weeks that I soon had my fake British accent back. And Lori and I marveled at the speed with which they changed prime ministers and how witty and precise were both David Cameron and Theresa May. It was then that Lori asked me an astute political question. Why can't we have a 9-week political campaign like they do? Ours is wearing me out. And when I recommended to her some readings on comparative government theory on the Parliament of the Republic, she was not at all interested in my recommendation. What an opportunity for dialogue we had last Sunday. I got up early, went across the street to the Greek Orthodox Basilica in Athens at 7 a.m., but no one was there. That service was just for the priests. So I sat amidst the icons and the smell of incense, and I prayed for you. And at 10:30, Lori and I showed up at St. Paul's Anglican Church at the foot of the Acropolis, which is a part of the Church of England, of which the Queen remains the head. They do not have the same separation of church and state as we do. Father Canon Malcolm Bradshaw was the priest, tall and thin, about 70 years old and British to the core. When the usher said to me after handing me a bulletin, "Carry on," I knew I was back among my ancestors. Only the week before, Pastor Bradshaw had been to Buckingham Palace to receive the MBE from Princess Anne. He is now a member of the British Empire, one rank below knighthood. For 17 years as an Anglican priest in Italy and 17 more now in Greece. There was read that day in worship a letter from the Bishop of Europe and Gibraltar about what Brexit was going to mean for the scattered Anglican communion. And the message was simple. Do not fear. Stay faithful in the midst of change. Serve the Lord and be patient. There were maybe about 50 people in the little Gothic church, and I confessed to weeping throughout the first hymn written by Charles Wesley. Soldiers of Christ, arise. I took it as the Lord's own gift to me since I am a son of the Wesleys in my faith. Malcolm preached on the parable of the Good Samaritan from Luke 10. And it was a powerful call to love the stranger in your midst. It pierced my heart to hear this strong and gentle man preach on the text, and out of his own frustration with how little help was coming their way from the EU in the exhausting work of caring for the refugee flood in Greece, including recently 1,000 hygiene kits that little church had put together for the men in the camps. During his message, I recognized one of the scholars to whom his sermon research was indebted, and when I asked him at the door, "Are you familiar with the work of Dr. Kenneth Bailey of the American University in Beirut on the passage?" And he smiled and said, "Yes, we've met several times." He knew what I was asking and chuckled when I said that I was from one of the former colonies that a British accent was at least 20 IQ points in South Carolina, and particularly if you were from Charleston. It was good not to have to lead or preach that Sunday and receive Holy Communion from the hands of a brother. It was the same order of worship that we use, and all the prayers were heartfelt and reached from where they stood around the globe. On the side wall was a marble plaque to honor members of the RAF, the Royal Navy and Army, who died defending Greece against the Nazis from 1939 to 1945. And as I stood there, I thought, the church is everywhere. It is one and holy and Catholic and apostolic, in war and in peace, in life and in death, and in life beyond it. We are all in this Christian thing together over the long haul of history. It was during the parish announcements that we learned about their work in the refugee camps, 2 on the mainland and 10 on the Greek Isles, and how 2 women, Rebecca and Sharon, both aid workers and church members, were in the congregation that day. What an opportunity, I thought. And so Lori and I invited them both to lunch. "Will you be my professors?" I asked. And what else could they do? It's one of my best lines. Sharon works for Samaritan Purse out of Charlotte as an expert in refugee logistics, and Rebecca, a young Cambridge graduate in geography, is helping build a partnership with Greek NGOs. I now know 2 women on the ground in the refugee camps, and Lori and I hope to send some money to Samaritan's Purse. I felt the Lord smile on me in a special way last Sunday. My heart was full, and my eyes were full of tears. I need from time to time to feel connected to the larger church. And after visiting St. Peter's in Rome and Hagia Sophia in Istanbul and St. Paul in Athens, my little cup was overflowing. In my days away from you, I have stood over the bones of St. Peter and St. Paul. I have stood in a church, now a mosque and museum, where the Nicene Creed was first confessed. And hearing Rebecca and Sharon share their stories, I now have a new perspective. And both of them reminded me how important it was in the midst of service work to have a local church and a service of friends and a pastor. They told me of 11 Muslims who'd recently come to faith in Jesus in one of the camps. It was not a fundraising scheme. It was over a plate in an outside restaurant. And it was prepared for by care and service to refugees. I am proudly an American Methodist Christian, and a layer beyond that, a Protestant. And that is a good place from which to live out the riches of the Christian faith. But we are also a bit undernourished on the riches of tradition and art and sculpture and philosophy, and a sense that God claims the whole of life and not just the narrowly religious part. And that is why it is good for my soul to acknowledge that in the Roman Catholic and Orthodox branches which lie beyond our borders, there are many riches to explore. Being around them helps me loosen the binding laces of my own biases and to breathe a richer, more mystical air. Not everything is how-to or all about me. It's about the mystery of the triune God who has showed His face to us in the laughter and agonies of Jesus Christ. It was on the walk to St. Paul's that morning that we passed a small, 1,000-year-old Orthodox church sitting in the middle of a business square and surrounded by Fifth Avenue quality shops. Talk about a contrast. We could hear the chanting in Greek from inside. So full was the church that 20 people stood outside. Now, because it was July in Athens and the church not air-conditioned, a side door stood open for the ventilation of the heat and the smoke of the incense. And as we passed, Lori stopped and said, "Phil, look at that." And we looked in the doorway into the back of the church. Behind the iconostasis, the wall of icons that blocks people from the sanctuary, the robed priests were praying the communion prayers before coming out to serve the people. And they did not know that we were viewing them. They were, and I mean this literally, lost in another world. The place where heaven and earth kiss each other in the Holy Communion. And while our practice is not theirs, they were celebrating a 1,600-year-old liturgy, the liturgy of St. John Chrysostom of Constantinople, just across the Aegean, that has not changed in 16 centuries. And that depth of reverence in holy mystery has sustained them in hard times for 7 times longer than we have been a nation. Now, what lasts does not have to be agreed with, but at a minimum, it should be respected. Maybe there is something in our flip attitudes and lack of reverence. Maybe kneeling and crossing yourself is a gesture to remind you just who you're dealing with. You see, folks, some things can just not be made casual. And I am concerned that in our safety and prosperity, we may have frittered away the capacity to be serious about much of anything. It was sobering to visit Pompeii for a view of a once great city frozen in time, and to realize just how prosperous and utterly immoral was every city in the ancient world, perhaps with Jerusalem as a minority report. And to have that confirmed in Corinth was to confirm to me just how difficult it was for Paul to preach this alien gospel in a Greco-Roman polytheistic culture. Now, we may lament the decline of morality in our age, but it's nothing like what it was in the ancient world. You see, the right and wrong channeling of human passions is an issue in every culture and for every church. And it either degrades or ennobles people inside or outside the bonds of marriage. And church teaching is not easy on this point. It is painful, but it is deeply good for people. Now, the visit to Corinth, which was on my bucket list, was especially rich for me. I saw the inscription from above the lintel of the synagogue where Paul first preached. I walked down the wide avenue he walked down, flanked by statues of all the pagan gods, and imagined him talking in the center court about the new philosophy called Christianity. I wondered how it was each afternoon when the sun passed its zenith and he found himself on the shadow side of the temple of Athena. And I thought, 5,000 miles away in Greenwood, there's a pastor who's just spent 6 months working through this letter, and now here I stand. And if it was hard for Paul to bridge the gospel in that culture, why should I think it's going to be easy for me? The engineering was amazing. The public works were amazing. The exactitude and beauty of the human sculptures were amazing. The Greeks and Romans were fascinated with the image of humanity and yet ignorant of its maker. I believe it is Jesus alone who restores human beings to their true destiny. And this is the narrow path of the Christian faith. All that is good and properly human, all the abiding goodness and longing for beauty and love and the wild wonder of the world belongs to Jesus, and Him alone it is healed. Apart from Jesus Christ, life remains in pieces, unassembled. In Him we enter a new world in the midst of the old. But it was not until Friday morning when we left Istanbul and landed in Paris that the trip came together in a most unusual conversation. As we were about to board the long leg from Paris to Atlanta, we found ourselves standing behind a woman who could have just stepped out of one of the display windows of Lancôme or Chanel that formed the commercial backdrop of the gate area at De Gaulle Airport. The body of a dancer, perfectly underdone makeup, great teeth, expensive haircut, the look of an early middle-aged cover girl. We found out later she was 51. No surgery, just lots of expensive self-care and exercise to push back time. The very look of wealth and sophistication. I don't remember how the conversation started, probably with us both recognizing each other as Americans in Paris. She named her city from the deep old South. And when I asked, "What brings you to Paris?" she said without looking up, "The tango." And I thought, hey, this is interesting. Because Lori was at my side, I felt confident to continue the discussion. And remember, I was out of uniform. Jeans, sport coat, loafers, white Panama hat. I do have such a garb for special occasions. Did you know that there was an elite tango subculture in the world's great cities? I didn't. But then I also live in a specialized dance subculture, the Pawleys Island Shag. She continued, I used to dance ballet, but I love the tango. What makes you love it so? I asked. And she said, well, it's so dramatic, so careful and choreographed. Intimacy on the dance floor. I felt myself flush red at her directness, but she was unembarrassed and continued. I go all over the world to tango events. Ours is not an open marriage, but we have separate parts of our lives. Clue number one, she's probably not Baptist. I hope not a Methodist. Maybe a lapsed Cajun Catholic. I probed further. You're married? Yes, but all he does is practice law. Well, I asked naively, thinking back to my days at awkward teenage dances and the courage it took to ask a girl to the floor, how does it all begin if you don't know anybody there? In the tango, you just look across the floor until you lock eyes with that special someone. And whenever either of you gives the slightest signal, and she showed Lori and I several lifts of the eyebrow, you move to the center and you begin the tango. I was starting to sweat a little bit. Should I tell her I'm a pastor before the conversation proceeds any further? I decided against it. Lori was at my side, and this was a world I had never viewed before. She said, do you know about the Paris Underground, the clubs? No, I do not, I said. Well, I've always been curious, so I went. The owner of the Lido, a friend of mine, told me about them, but I would not go alone, so I hired a bodyguard as my escort. $5,000 a night, former French military. It was all very sophisticated, very interesting, very open. There are companies that provide such protection? Yes, she said, but not cheaply, and you have to know the right ones. I was not a prude, but I'd had about all I wanted by this time. She was bumping into my boundaries, and she would have no doubt answered any question Lori and I dared ask. Beneath the slick packaging was a hungry heart, and we were safe to talk to. And is that not God's grace as well? It was, I later recognized, the same conversation Paul might have had with one of the female sophisticates of Corinth years ago. A woman with education and style and chic and money to come and do and go as she pleased. But one thing was missing. She was looking to the adrenaline and drama of endless romances to fill a hole in her heart, and her adventures were getting only darker and more dangerous. It was a downward spiral that now found her in the catacombs underneath the streets of Paris. She was a modern idolater, a worshiper of false deities, and may have not known it or not cared if she did. She aspired to be a modern Athena or Aphrodite, a magnet for men, just like in the temple of Corinth under which Paul preached. She wanted them to worship her, to be their idol. Here was a woman who wanted to be a goddess, which is several levels beyond diva or princess. Her next trip, if memory serves me, is to Argentina, the high temple of the tango cult. Friends, the spirits of the old polytheistic world are making a comeback in our day, and as I listened to several tour guides, you had the sense that Christianity and its moral code was just too restrictive for our modern world. What was needed was a new embrace of the old deities of the ancient world and their free lifestyles. Now remember, for most people, when they stop believing in the one God, it's not that they believe in no God. They now believe in all the gods. The real alternative to classical Christian and Jewish faith is not atheism, but polytheism. Not no God, but many gods of shifting loyalty. I was not drawn to this woman. I felt sad. She was missing what Lori and I daily enjoy, which is a richly secure marriage and a common faith. We were on our 40th wedding trip. She was moving from man to man on a tango dance floor as her husband padded his resume with another big case and fat settlement. She's married to a dunce, and it will not be long until they crash. Such a life cannot be sustained except at a very high cost. No amount of money or toys or romance or learning or exploration of the forbidden can fill the hole in the heart God reserves for Himself. She was a beautiful woman and a lost soul. And a few more years of globetrotting, I suspect, and maybe a nip and tuck or two. But one night, no one will lock eyes with her across the dance floor of strangers, and then what will she do? There was some evidence in the conversation she was already drawing her 24-year-old daughter into her exotic world away from home. And I shivered at the thought of God's wrath for those who corrupt others, particularly then their own children. When I shift the discussion away from her life to our trips to Athens and Rome, she responded by trotting out for me her dual degree in classics, meaning Greek and Latin. And no doubt would have quoted the Greek of Socrates to me had I given her a chance. She was worldly and she was well educated and she was no fake. When I later asked myself, why did she tell us all this? The only answer Lori and I came up with was, we listened and showed interest. And I wondered if in her world of dance and forbidden romance there was a Christian woman strategically placed in her life. And I prayed for her, though I never revealed my vocation, not of embarrassment, but to avoid shaming her if there was any shame left in her. And I suspect that there was. I went to the bathroom to make sure the word pastor was not tattooed across my forehead. It wasn't, but the grace of God was there. And I had the sense her story was not just a view of the old and ancient world, but of the new paganism that has either never heard or else grown bored with Jesus and His church. And if she ever comes to Christ, either for the first time or after a long prodigal season, it will be through great pain. In 20 or 30 years, to stare at the wrinkles and the sags in the mirror and wonder, what happened to my life? After we parted, she to first class and us to the next section, Lori, who has the gift of spiritual radar, looked at me and says, she's a modern pagan, isn't she? She's like what we've been learning about the ancient world. Yes, I said, and is it sad? And then Lori said, she's smart and gorgeous, but there's a hole in her heart she's trying to fill with men. And then Lori went back to reading her chosen book for the summer, John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. I kid you not. Where the women have names like virtue and chastity and constance and faith. Oh, what a joy to be married to a virtuous woman and to have a life of real adventure. Flying out just before the Turkish coup, and flying into such amazing conversations in the Paris airport with a lost coquette. Don't tell me that life with Jesus is boring, because I've just got too much evidence to the contrary. I love the church. I serve the church along with others. But I tell you, I tremble for the day when the fire of God meets the life of Phil Threlkeel and God burns away everything that's not of Him. And I hope there's some gold and silver and precious stones left, because all that is combustible is going to be gone. It was good to go, and it is good to return. And I will be 63 in just over a week, and how old that sounds. But the truth be told, I'm still trying to figure out what to do when I grow up. Time is growing short. And there are many good stories to tell, because God is the storyteller. And all God's stories finally end at the cross and resurrection of Jesus. I'm a rich man, and I recommend to you a life of rich companionship with Jesus Christ in His church. Love Him. Obey Him and watch what starts to happen. There is no shortage of meaning with our God. Because the time is short, and I want to honor your time, I want you to stand and sing with me the first stanza of hymn number 545.